Hey there, I'm George Sedano, a name you might recognize from crushing the competition on Around the Horn, and a voice you might recognize from ESPN Radio in Los Angeles. Fun fact, though, I also got Spurs head coach Greg Popovich to smile once during a sideline interview. So you're going to be hearing different voices hosting ESPN Daily in the coming weeks, and I'm one of them. I'll be with you the rest of the week, helping this podcast do what it's always done, tell the best sports stories in audio day in and day out. Thanks for listening. Kevin Seifert, the 2023 NFL Draft kicks off tonight live on ESPN at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. But before we're all treated to a full weekend of Mel Kiper and Todd McShay's analysis, there's a story you brought to us from a previous draft 20 years ago back in 2003. Carson Palmer goes number one. The Texans get future All-Pro Andre Johnson at number three. But the drama we're here to discuss begins with the Minnesota Vikings at pick number seven. What happened?
Well, it was the 2003 draft, the Minnesota Vikings draft room in Eden Prairie, Minnesota.
Minnesota is on the clock now. The Minnesota slot is before Jacksonville, Carolina, and Baltimore. Could one of those teams come up into the seven hole with Minnesota to get left, which Minnesota wouldn't go very far and still get their player?
For one moment, they swelled with relief. They had really been trying to trade down to the number 10 pick with the Baltimore Ravens and thought they had a deal with 32 seconds left on the clock. They reported the terms of the deal to the NFL draft table and started to watch the broadcast and wanted to see who the Ravens were going to pick.
Okay, so they trade back and they get more picks later in the draft. So what happened next?
Well, they started to notice something strange. The team logo on the ESPN broadcast hadn't changed. It still showed that they were on the clock and not the Ravens.
Well, Denny, the clock is winding down on the Vikings. What's going on?
In talking to their vice president of football operations, Rob Brzezinski, they had thought they had called in the trade. They were sitting in the draft room, just watching it on TV, and then, quote, all hell broke loose.
Minnesota Vikings have had them turned one in. Here it is.
What?
You can't pass. Jacksonville's on the clock. Who do they take, Mel?
Well, I think you're looking
fired.
As it turned out, the trade was never executed by the NFL, so the Vikings remained on the clock, thinking the Ravens were there, but instead, the Vikings' time expired, and it became one of the wildest scenes in modern NFL draft history.
It's the one day on the calendar that every NFL team prepares for all year. The first day of the NFL draft. Hundreds of scouting reports, thousands of hours of tape that's been watched, and all of it leading up to the precious minutes when a team is finally on the clock. But 20 years ago, the Minnesota Vikings' turn came up, and the pick never came in. So today, Kevin Seifert explains how a meddlesome owner, a landline phone, and a lot of confusion caused all hell to break loose at the NFL draft. I'm George Sedano. It's Thursday, April 27th, draft day. And this is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Kevin, it's been 20 years now since one of the most infamous moments in draft history, as you alluded to earlier, the Vikings missing their pick in 2003. Why tell this story now?
Well, I mean, everyone likes an anniversary story, so it's 20 years since then. And when I went in search of the people who were involved, some of them who still work for the team or in the NFL and some of whom are retired, a lot of them had interest in sort of setting the record straight about what had happened, acknowledging the embarrassment, but also trying to explain a lot of the context that happened around it. And I also, just from a personal level, just kind of have enjoyed and wanted to communicate to people, modern NFL fans, just how wild the NFL used to be.
I mean, this is insane. I remember watching this in real time and just all the chaos that surrounded it on the broadcast, at least. So I can only imagine what was transpiring behind the scenes. Paint us the picture on how all of this transpires in 2003. What goes into all of this?
In those days, a team was in its team facility, obviously, and all the decision makers were there. They would have one or two representatives sitting at a table in New York City, whether it was Madison Square Garden or Radio City Music Hall, and they would call that representative and say, okay, we want to draft such and such player, write his name down on a card, and then take that card up to the NFL desk and hand it to the NFL official who's standing basically at the front of the stage. And that NFL official would then verify this is the player the team wants to take, would certify it, and then hand it to the commissioner, and then it would be announced in that way.
So that's the way it's supposed to work. But in this case, with the Vikings picking seventh, but trying to trade down with the Ravens at 10, how did this go so wrong?
Well, the first thing to know is that in those days, the teams were all in their draft rooms in their team facilities, and they didn't even know, they didn't have the clock, the official draft clock in their facilities. They had a representative in New York City, and that was the only person in the entire organization who knew exactly how much time was left. So they were left kind of guessing when their time would actually expire. And so they eventually realized that it had, because they saw the chaos on TV, Chris Berman and everyone else laughing and crying hysterically about what was happening.
The card is in, but whose card?
Whose card?
Whose card? The suspense is killing us. Let's go up to the commissioner.
But they had thought they had called in the trade, so they're immediately trying to figure out what's going on. And in the meantime, the NFL policy had very rarely, if ever, been implemented. But if a team's time expired, the next team up was now on the clock, and that team could make their pick at any time. Nowadays, that isn't even an issue. Teams submit their picks electronically, so they don't have to ever be in that situation. But that's the way it was back then.
All right, so in 2003, the Vikings would have had to communicate the pick via a runner, right? That runs up a card up to the stage and tells them who they're going to pick. And then their brass is realizing that this trade never went through, and they're still on the clock as time expired. What was their first inclination at that point? Like, what did they feel like they needed to do? Who did they contact first?
Their representative in New York City was a man named Leo Lewis, who used to be a player for them and was now their director of player programs. And they're asking him what's going on. And he's telling them, I'm seeing the Jaguars go up to the stage. I'm seeing the Panthers go up to the stage. Our time must have expired. They didn't know why. They didn't know why the trade that they thought they had agreed on had not occurred, but they did know that clearly their time had expired and they had to jump back in, and that's what they did.
So the Vikings realized this deal they wanted to make with the Ravens to trade down actually never happened. And now they're getting passed by as the Jaguars and the Panthers just got ahead of them to make their picks. So the Vikings panic and submit their pick for the player that they want, which is Kevin Williams, defensive tackle from Oklahoma State. And they do get their guy, but how did this thing go sideways like this?
There was this added complication that really forced the Vikings to trade down, even though, as it turned out, the market was not very strong for it. Their owner at the time was Red McCombs, and he had been trying to get a new stadium to replace the Metrodome in Minnesota. He had not been successful. Revenues were not very high. He had decided internally to put the team up for sale, and in the meantime, did not want to spend any more money than he had to operate the team. So the morning of that draft, and this was revealed to me in the course of reporting the story and something that really had not been publicized prior to, his right-hand man, the team president, Gary Woods, was in the draft room, pulled the team decision makers out of the draft room and mandated that they trade down. This was before the draft even started. Everybody knew internally that they wanted Kevin Williams, but they were mandated to trade down, which would allow Red McCombs to save millions of dollars. Even if you move down just three spots, you probably save $3 million in those days on the signing bonus of a rookie player. And so they're trying feverishly to trade down, but there really isn't anybody who desperately wants to get up to number seven and get their selection. And so they finally find the Ravens, but the deal that the Ravens were offering was kind of lukewarm. It was a fourth and a sixth round pick, If you looked at the old Jimmy Johnson chart from those days that sort of measured values of draft picks, and a lot of teams relied on that, it was not a good trade for the Vikings. And in a normal situation, they would not have taken it. They would not have risked moving down from number 7 to number 10 and to lose out on a player they desperately wanted in Kevin Williams if another team in between decided to try to draft him. But because they had this mandate, they had no choice. And they kept pushing to get a better deal and kept pushing and pushing, but they couldn't get anything better than what the Ravens were offering. That was one of the reasons why they pushed it so close to the time limit, was they were trying to get the Ravens to sweeten their offer, but they just wouldn't.
This is where fans get really upset when you have the meddlesome owner, and these type of stories are the ones that bring that stuff out, certainly. But it just puts these guys in the front office, the coach, everyone, in the most unenviable of positions possible.
They really were. And what they were really worried about in terms of the front office and the coaching staff was in this mess, losing Kevin Williams. And they, at the time, they didn't know who the Jaguars wanted, or they didn't know who the Panthers wanted for sure. They knew the Ravens probably wanted to trade up to get Byron Leftwich, the quarterback who ended up going to Jacksonville, ironically. But they were really worried that this whole thing was not only going to be embarrassing, but it was going to end up making them lose the player they very much wanted. And so it didn't register to them at that moment how sort of viral the whole episode would be. I mean, they were watching the broadcast, but they didn't necessarily hear all the audio, and they didn't know how people were reacting even in real time to how crazy this moment was, that they had missed their pick and two teams had jumped ahead of them. So long story short, they were extremely nervous, that less with the embarrassment potential and more with it losing the player that they desperately wanted to draft.
Okay, Kevin, the clock's expired. It's bedlam on the ESPN broadcast. Berman has got his head buried in his hands. Denny Green is on there, the former Vikings coach, and he's enjoying all of this, by the way. So give me the blow-by-blow here.
We had reporters talk to the people who were in New York City, the team reps for both the Jaguars and the Panthers. And the Jaguars, it was their video director, Mike Perkins, and he was watching the Vikings table, which was right next to him. It was like 5 feet away. And he's seeing that they didn't fill out a card.
Baltimore's
you
in
gotta
state
like court. Seven players in the country. Come on, take a guy. You're inside a minute, and nobody's moved. You can tell the way they're looking.
So he's thinking in his mind, they must have made a trade, or think they've made a trade, or something's about to happen. And he is on the phone with the people in the Jaguars draft room back in Jacksonville and saying, you got to give me a name. I don't know if they're going to miss their pick or if there's a mistake, or we're getting ready to be on the clock, and we got to try to get whoever you guys want, and I'll get up there as fast as I can.
Jacksonville's got to have the pick already.
Guess what, Denny? If Leftwich is your guy, you get it in now.
They finally realized what was happening, and they said, okay, we want Byron Leftwich, the quarterback.
The card is in, but whose card?
Whose card?
Whose card? The suspense is killing us. Let's go up to the commissioner.
With the eighth selection in the 2003 NFL draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Byron Leftwich, quarterback from Marshall.
You know, all right.
And that's actually part of the story, is that the Ravens, if they had consummated this trade, they were going to take Byron Leftwich. So that's a little bit of a history shift that would have happened. But the Jaguars end up with Byron Leftwich. The Panthers guy, Jackie Miles, he was their equipment manager. He was on the floor as well, and he saw the whole thing happening. And he said when it got down to 2 minutes, he's telling his guys, hey, look, if this time expires, you got to give me a name. You got to tell me who you want. As soon as Jacksonville gets their guy in, I'll get our guy in, and we might be able to draft somebody we couldn't otherwise get.
I'll tell you one thing. They have created their first quarterback.
Let me tell you what's going on here. Minnesota can run up at any time with their pick, but Carolina's going to beat them to the clock.
Well, you know what? Obviously, they're going to take Marcus Trufant, because Carolina's probably going to take
the eighth selection in the 2003 NFL draft. The Carolina Panthers select Jordan Gross, offensive tackle from Utah.
While the Vikings were trying to collect themselves and regroup and get Kevin Williams drafted, the Jaguars get Byron Leftwich really at the number 7 pick. The Panthers get Jordan Gross at number 8. And then the Vikings at number 9 take Kevin Williams.
Well, here comes Baltimore with speed Carl Lewis-like.
Maybe Minnesota beat Baltimore, though.
Let's see. Or is it Minnesota? What are they doing?
With the 9th selection in the 2003 NFL draft, the Minnesota Vikings select Kevin Williams, defensive tackle from Oklahoma State.
Okay. Well, they got their guy, Boomer. I mean, that's the most important thing.
I guess. Well, that was an interesting way to get him.
Up next, how did the communication break down? And could it happen again tonight?
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Where I'm confused is how one team thought they had a trade and the other didn't. So how does that work? How did the league explain it?
At the time and even now, the NFL has been fairly quiet about offering a sort of a public explanation. But what they've said is a trade is not a trade until both teams have reported it in to the league desk in New York City. And the Vikings did and the Ravens didn't. The Ravens said that the issue was that they called the phone and couldn't get through. From the NFL perspective, you know, obviously if the phone had rung and they'd heard it, they would have picked it up. And so all the NFL would ever say was that the Ravens never reported the trade, and so it was never an official deal. And what happened after that was on the shoulders of the teams to figure out, and they figured it out in the way we all saw. But it was interesting that the following year, the NFL, which at the time they just had the one phone and the one guy to pick it up, added multiple phone lines, added more staffers to that table, did all the things that would suggest that they were internally acknowledging that something from a technological or an attention standpoint had happened that had prevented the Ravens from being able to report the trade as they tried to do.
I'm picturing like a red phone you see in the movies just ringing at the desk. What did the Ravens say happened?
Yeah, the Ravens, you know, Ozzie Newsome was their general manager at the time. He said that a trade is not a trade until I talked to Joel Bussert, who was the NFL official who was in charge of handling those phone calls. And he said, I never talked to Joel Bussert. And so they tried, but they couldn't get through. I don't even know how many of today's fans know what it sounds like to hear a busy signal from a phone when they make a call. But that was the implication that the Ravens had gotten, that they tried to call. And maybe that was because they were on the line with the Vikings at the time that the Ravens made the call, and without call waiting or without a double line, it just rang busy. And so it's almost like an archaic notion that people used to try to make phone calls and get a busy signal, but that apparently was part of the limited technology that the NFL had at that time.
You know, Kevin, oddly enough, I have a vague recollection of this happening to the Vikings in the previous year when they selected Brian McKinney. What was that all about?
Yeah, one of the common misperceptions of this whole era of NFL draft lore is that the Vikings missed their pick 2 years in a row. The Vikings were involved in what happened in 2002, but they were not the team that missed their pick. What happened was the Vikings were picking at number 7 that year, and they really wanted a defensive lineman named Ryan Sims, and it was kind of publicly well known. And so another team that also wanted Ryan Sims was the Chiefs, who had a lower pick in the draft.
I think there's a lot of things going on right now. You've got Kansas City, who wants to leapfrog Minnesota there and go up there to take Ryan Sims, the defensive tackle from North Carolina, because Minnesota's got their eyes on that guy.
and they decided they wanted to trade ahead of the Vikings to make sure they got Sims and not give the Vikings a chance to take him. And so the team above the Vikings at number six was the Cowboys. And the Cowboys and Chiefs were then talking about a trade that would allow the Chiefs to jump up and draft Sims. But their time ran out. So technically, the Cowboys' time expired in 2002.
Oh, it's going crazy.
The Cowboys are passed. That means that Minnesota can run their pickup right now there and take their guy.
Oh, my God. We haven't seen this. Is that what happened?
If the Vikings had been fast enough, they could have done what the Jaguars and Panthers did the following year and jump ahead of the Cowboys to get the guy that they wanted in Ryan Sims. But they were a little bit slow to realize what was happening.
See, Minnesota could have jumped in here and took the guy that Kansas City wanted. If it's a Kansas City trade.
They weren't ready, mate.
There's no excuse for not being ready. There's no excuse for not being ready.
So it's kind of like the supermarket line with the old lady that you give too polite and she gets right in front of you.
The Chiefs and Cowboys got their trade figured out, and the Chiefs jumped up there. And according to Carl Peterson, who was the Chiefs president, their equipment manager sort of bodied the Vikings representative out of the way. Again, an example of how crazy the NFL was in those days, that one guy bodying another guy out of the way is how a team got the guy they wanted to draft. But that's how what happened in 2002. Ryan Sims ends up with the Chiefs at number six, and then number seven, with Sims off the board, the Vikings then took Brian McKinney, the left tackle, who actually became a cornerstone player for them for the next decade. They didn't miss their pick. They just were slow to try to take advantage of the Cowboys ahead of them missing their pick.
Let's talk about Kevin Williams here now. What is going on in his life as all this is going down?
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, because of the fact that everybody knew the Vikings wanted to draft Ryan Sims the year before, they had overcorrected and decided to keep their first round pick as secret as possible. So they saw Kevin Williams, the defensive tackle, at the Senior Bowl that year and never talked to him again. Didn't talk to him at the combine, didn't talk to him at pro days, didn't try to do any interviews. They didn't want anyone to know that they had interest. That's how much they were trying to orchestrate their ability to draft him. And so Kevin Williams on draft day, you know, he figures he's going to be a top 15 pick as best as he and his agent can figure out, but he has no idea the Vikings have any interest in him at all. And in fact, he assumes they have none because they never really circled back with him after the Senior Bowl. And so he's at a cookout outside his house in Arkansas, and he's not really paying a ton of attention to the broadcast, because usually when a team is going to draft you, they call you ahead of time and let you know, and you start talking to the coach and the general manager. And then finally you see it on TV that they've actually, you know, formally selected you. The first moment he had any idea something was happening, his brother's girlfriend starts screaming while she's watching the TV from the inside, and they run in and, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" "Well, you just got drafted by the Vikings." And he's like, "What? That's completely, you know, news to me. I didn't know that." Then his phone rings, and then he finds out that the Vikings had taken him at number nine, and he's happy. And he really didn't know in real time, at least, any of this stuff had happened. And he immediately goes to the airport and gets on a plane and flies to Minnesota. So he was one of the last people to find out. The circumstances of his being drafted by the Vikings were almost unprecedented in the history of the NFL. And to his credit, he said it really never bothered him. He never really thought that he needed an explanation or felt disrespected by the debacle, as he called it.
What about his money, though? Because I feel like everyone who's listening to this is probably wondering, well, wait a second, how did that affect him financially?
He was the ninth pick. The Vikings wanted him at number seven, but they weren't able to draft him there. And so the rookie pay scale was different in those days, and actually much more lucrative than it is now. But it still was based on the spot in which you were drafted. And so he eventually got the ninth player money. If you compared it to what Leftwich got at number seven, it was a little bit different because he was a quarterback. But he probably would have had $3 million more dollars in a signing bonus alone if he had been the number seven pick. But in terms of, you know, could he protest or could he file a grievance or anything along those lines, there really wasn't much recourse, and he was just looking to move forward as well.
And it all worked out in the end, because he's a borderline Hall of Fame type player. And even in the previous year, when the snafu happened with the Cowboys and Brian McKinney, you mentioned both pillars of the franchise in that particular era. So it all worked out in the end for them, luckily for them.
Yeah, they got the player they wanted. As it turned out, they got him cheaper than they wanted. When they finally did get Kevin Williams, there was this huge celebration in the draft room. They'd all been sweating and very nervous and trying to figure out what was happening. But when they eventually got Kevin and it was official from the NFL, as Mike Tice said, we were in a very celebratory mood at that point.
Okay, but regardless of all of that and their celebration because they got their guy, I would imagine their fan base was probably mortified at everything they had seen transpire on television.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, like most teams, they had a draft party or some sort of interaction with the fans. How did that go?
Yeah, they had actually had a huge draft party that year because they had the number 7 pick. When you're in the top 10, you can anticipate a really good player coming your way, maybe somebody you've heard a lot about in college football. So in their little indoor facility at their old practice place, they probably had 4,000 or 5,000 people there. And so the party was being sort of emceed by the radio announcer at the time and currently, Paul Allen. And Paul Allen, in his mind, wanted to see the Vikings take Terrell Suggs. And so he was leading the crowd in cheers of Suggs, Suggs, Suggs. And so they all had this anticipation that the Vikings were going to draft Terrell Suggs there and we're going to get this great high-end pass rushing prospect. And that's a very exciting thing for any fan base. So when they miss the pick and other teams start jumping them, they kind of get quiet and are confused. And as Paul Allen said, many of them were inebriated at the time. And so it's the kind of what you would expect if you were at an actual game, I guess, and there was a run of mistakes. And so then they finally get up on the clock and instead of taking Terrell Suggs, they take Kevin Williams. And so at that point, the place just was like shaking, in boos and anger and people throwing their, memorabilia on the ground and storming out and all these kind of things that happened in that moment. So Mike Tice is coming from the draft room in a very celebratory mood and is hoping to come into this draft party and pump up the fans, finds a very different environment when he walks in the door.
Okay, so he walks in the door and how do these fans greet him?
They let him have it. And in fact, both Paul Allen and Mike Tice, when I talked to them, remembered one sort of elderly woman in particular walking right up to him as he's coming up on the podium and the stage that they had set up and just dropping profanity on him. And there's a famous clip, audio clip, that was recorded at that time of Tice is so taken aback.
Okay, calm down.
And that clip is still used here in Minnesota on their sports talk shows whenever people get too excited in their debates. And the takeaways of this story is that as funny as it sounds to us now and how crazy of a scene it sounds like it was at this draft party, it really cut deeply on a lot of the people who were involved, in part because it was embarrassing, but in part because it happened for reasons they couldn't really explain at the time.
Well, the one thing you can't say publicly in those scenarios is, hey, our owner made us trade down because he's cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And that sort of is the bottom line of the reporting I did. And so it was well known that they were not operating on the same budget as a lot of other teams. But it was not known then that the owner had demanded it's 100% that you have to trade down. You might trade down if you get a great offer or a player that you wanted ended up coming off the board or some other circumstance, but it's very rare that you go into it knowing that no matter what the circumstances are, for financial reasons only, you have to give up your spot.
Let's just play a game here for a second. What would it be like if that happened today in 2023 with all those fail-safes? If someone got jumped today with social media and everything being brought to you instantaneously, how would that be reacted to?
I think the draft would be burned down. I can't imagine that it wouldn't overshadow everything that happened for the entire draft weekend, that there would be investigations and Roger Goodell would have to have a press conference and everybody would be wondering if the NFL had tried to tilt the draft towards from one team to another. That was one thing that never came up at that point, was the NFL playing favorites, trying to help the Ravens or hurt the Vikings. And that's something we hear a lot more about nowadays, especially with the advent of gambling and all that sort of thing. So the NFL would almost certainly have to hire like a third party investigation to figure out what had happened and to prove to the public that there had been an honest mistake or an honest explanation, as opposed to just kind of, as they did 20 years ago, letting the teams sort through it on their own.
Kevin Seifert will make sure to keep the phone lines clear tonight. So thanks for sharing your reporting with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, George.
I'm George Sedano. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.